You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Well, I hope you've all enjoyed your Memorial Day weekend. I certainly did. Caught up on a lot of rest, as well as some reading. Bought a few inexpensive books. There was a big sale at Half Price Books. Hope you took advantage of it, because you got 20% off. And I usually buy the cheapest books under a dollar, so that 20% off really made a difference. Basically, no taxes. And I'm sure some of you found other sales, as well as celebrated Memorial Day and remembered the fallen dead, the people of the United States Armed Forces that 24/7 are defending the country against its enemies. And that's the story I'm going to really focus on today. It's going to be a rather short show, and that's why I decided I'm going to devote this show to foreign policy and what should be done in the world. Many people are starting to question President Barack Obama's foreign policy. Not only his opponents in the Republican Party, but also people in his own party. My criticism of his foreign policy, it just simply hasn't worked. And it's really part of it is well, let me explain where I think he's making a fundamental mistake. You don't tell people or threaten them publicly and then not follow through. And I think we've seen this with the red line that he kept on redrawing in Syria and then ultimately not doing anything. Now, I was not for going into Syria at all. So I was glad at the ultimate outcome, because I already knew that Assad has a major stockpile of chemical and biological weapons. I will celebrate the day the Assad regime falls. But the problem is there's no good side in Syria. And that's the problem. You need to, sometimes foreign policy has been compared to chess. And I'm not a chess player, but at one time I did play. You really need to think several steps ahead. And if you threaten someone and don't follow through, you're in a weaker position, because then in the future, he discounts you, what you say. So if anything, that the much better approach is to talk to these people privately. And that can be done through diplomatic channels as well as just picking up the phone. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the president. It could be the Secretary of State or someone under him. It's much better to do it in private, where the egos are not engaged. They're always going to be engaged, than to publicly do it and then don't follow through. And that's probably my biggest criticism of it. But there's one more. Foreign policy, I think, is very, very inconsistent. You would get the impression that he wants to bring all the troops home and disengage. And I say the impression because I think it's a very false impression, because the United States is engaged all over the world. Remember what happened in Libya. Why suddenly did we overthrow Gaddafi? And this illustrates, Libya illustrates another pattern. You've heard the phrase troops on the ground, or boots on the ground. Excuse me, boots on the ground. In Libya, we heard that phrase. There won't be any American boots on the ground. Well, first of all, that simply was not true. That was a lie. There were boots on the ground. There were CIA boots. There weren't Army boots. There weren't Marine boots. But there were special operator boots as well as CIA boots. And it was done in conjunction with the United Kingdom and France. So NATO was involved. So this and the other expression that comes to mind is, we're going to lead from behind. Well, generals in the past have led from behind, because you don't want your commander killed. So it doesn't make sense to be him to be on the front lines. I'm not expecting the president or the commander-in-chief to be leading the charge. That is delegated. But you're not fooling anyone, and it certainly didn't fool me and the, most of the American people. The American people knew that it was the United States government that was leading this. Now, that doesn't mean the United Kingdom and France, as well as some of the NATO countries, wanted Gaddafi overthrown. But there was some economic interest involved, namely oil. That was clear, because it was really Europe, and it's Southern Europe, Italy primarily, that would benefit through the overthrow of Gaddafi. But you need to think several steps ahead. And this is where I think you have a big problem with the Obama administration, the people he has manning it, because there was really no good choices. It came out that he was trying to support the Muslim Brotherhood, but if you really looked at some of the players, the militias, the rebel groups in Libya, many of them were Islamic fanatics, of which several were affiliated with Al-Qaeda. And today, what do we have in Libya? It is still a very, very dangerous place to be. I believe we've either pulled out or are in the process of pulling out completely from Libya. That's my understanding. I'll double check that, but that's the last I've really heard about it. It's not a country you want to be in. It's really in flux. You have rival groups contending for power, and you need to understand the Benghazi area and its surrounding neighbors. Remember, Benghazi is in the eastern portion of Libya on the coast. Tripoli, the capital of Libya, is in the western portion of Libya, again on the coast, because most of the country is desert. But you have oil, and that, in my mind, is the reason you have interest, both European interest and U.S. interest, in who controls Libya. The problem is, by engaging and overthrowing Gaddafi, why Gaddafi, again, I'm glad he's gone and his regime has fallen, but have we replaced it with anything that's much better? I think at best marginally, but not if you factor in that the whole Benghazi area, the eastern portion of Libya, and it's not just the eastern portion, but primarily the eastern portion, has now become sort of an R&R, a rest and relaxation center for Gaddafi, and a training grounds where they train and got one of the consequences of when Gaddafi fell is the rebels broke into these weapon lockers, these bunkers, supply houses, warehouses containing really 30 to 40 years of accumulation of arms that Gaddafi bought through the oil money. And now many of those weapons, not all, but many of those weapons are now in the hands of these rebels. Many of these rebel groups are sworn enemies of the United States. So on balance, I think it's somewhat of a hard case to make that the situation in Libya is any better than it was prior to Gaddafi. Because remember, Gaddafi was trying to suppress the rebellion, which is understandable, but many of those were the religious fanatics. Remember, Gaddafi came to power as a result of a military coup, and he felt threatened, legitimately threatened, by the religious fanatics, including the Muslim Brotherhood, but also Al-Qaeda. So that's just one country that I think at best you could give the president a grade of D. Some would say C, but in this case I think a D, because what was really going on? And we're going to hear more about this in the summer. The CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, was running an operation in Benghazi. And they were tasked not only to gather intelligence, which is one of their primary functions, but they were engaged in what's called a presidential finding, a covert operation approved by the president. And there were several aspects to it. One, obviously, getting intelligence, but more importantly, to gather up the weapons from the various militia groups, aggregate them, and then ship many, if not all, of these weapons to Syria, as well as train various fighters to go over there and use the weapons, and in turn train others to use them in Syria. So what you had was Libya being used as a big training facility and storage facility for weapons that ultimately were going to be shipped to Syria and the Syrian rebels. Now, a couple of points. Gaddafi was in power for many decades, and over those years, he accumulated approximately 20,000 surface-to-air missiles. These are the missiles, you've seen them. They're shoulder-mounted. They're fairly accurate. They're very accurate up to about 15,000 feet. They have a limited range, but when a plane is coming in for a landing or is flying low, they're vulnerable to attack by this surface-to-air missile. It's very much aim and shoot. Now, you need to get the battery power up, and you need to know how to load the weapon as well as fire it, but that does not seem to be a problem because many, many of these al-Qaeda as well as militia groups knew how to use these weapons. So there was clear that many people, not everyone, but you had enough people in Libya, in these militia groups, including the ones that are run by religious fanatics, al-Qaeda being the leading one, so-called affiliates of al-Qaeda, that got a hold of these shoulder-mounted surface-to-air missiles. Now, these missiles can take out, bring down military aircraft such as helicopters and slow-moving aircraft, especially when they're coming in for a landing or taking off. They're very, very effective in that situation. And the reason why they're dangerous, unless you have countermeasures aboard the aircraft, and most do not, including ours. Some of ours do, but most of our aircraft do not. It can bring down military aircraft. Now, obviously, if you're flying beyond the range of these missiles, you're flying either very, very fast or very, very high, it's not likely you're going to be shot down. But that's not the case for military transport planes. It's not the case with helicopters. And it's not the case of even jet fighters that are coming in for a landing or taking off. So one of the primary places that the rebels would use these weapons is where they were attacking airfields. And when the planes either took off or came in for landing, they would fire these missiles. That's why in some countries, even today, such as in Afghanistan, when you land a plane, you don't do it the normal way that an airliner would do it, namely be in a long pattern and shoot the landing. What you normally do is you come in and over the center of the runway, do like a corkscrew circle down, down, and down rather quickly. And the reason they do that is they fear that on either side of the runway, you'll have people with these shoulder-mounted surface-to-air missiles. So I'm of the opinion that in Libya and Syria, that our foreign policy has been a failure. I would not have intervened in Libya, and I definitely would not have intervened in Syria, but we did. Now, we suddenly had second thoughts about Syria. You see, what happens is, and it's happened in the past, the CIA was very, very successful in overthrowing the government of Iran in the early 50s. And as a result of that, it was done on the cheap, and it was successful, and they brought the Shah of Iran to power, brought him back to power. Because of that, the thinking was, amongst the CIA and past presidents, that this was a very good way to overthrow governments. It's not expensive, and if it's done right, people don't even know the United States is responsible. Now, ultimately, they did, but during the overthrow of the Shah, most people didn't know the CIA was involved. So it's a precedent often cited as an example for the one option or one alternative, one strategy for dealing with what I would call bad actors, whether it's Gaddafi in Libya or Assad in Syria. And I think what you're seeing the president doing is relying more and more not on the military, but on the CIA to conduct covert operations in a number of countries, many of them which we probably don't even know of. We don't even know of. Because that's the nature of covert operations. They're supposed to be covert. They're supposed to be secret. It's not supposed to be on the news. It's not to be spoken about on talk radio, because if it's talked about on talk radio, the mission has been blown. Just a small example, and this was a mistake, but it is a screw-up. The president was in Afghanistan, and I don't want to go too much in the details, but he met with a number of people, including the CIA station chief and cabal in Afghanistan. Now, 2 points. This was first pointed out to the administration by the press, the Washington Post. Are you sure you want us to release this name? Because he's the CIA station chief. Notice I haven't given his name. And it was a big oops. It was a big mistake. The answer is obviously not. Now, it's not that the name of the CIA station chief is not known to a number of people in Afghanistan, both in the Afghanistan government and I'm sure by the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Eventually, the name comes out, but it's not well known, neither his name or his photograph. So that's one thing you need to understand. It's not like nobody knows. There are a few people in country that know. You want to keep it as secret as you can. But over time, especially if the person is in country for any length of time, it eventually becomes known to the host country, usually their intelligence services as well as their military, because there's usually some interaction with them. There's a strong suspicion as to who the station chief is, and in many cases, they know who it is, because they're interacting with the intelligence service of the country they're in. But for obvious security reasons, there are people that would want the CIA's station chief either killed or even better, captured, kidnapped. Remember the case of James Buckley in Lebanon? They tortured him for many, many months and ultimately killed him. And he had a lot of knowledge that unfortunately that the enemies of the United States got through torture. So you do not want to know, you do not want it widely known who the station chief is in any country, especially a country as dangerous as Afghanistan. And one problem is, once his name becomes known, widely known, for all practical purpose, that person's career is over. Now, he'll have a job at headquarters in the CIA and maybe training future CIA intelligence agents as well as station chiefs. But because his life would be in severe danger, they can't send him back. And it's questionable as to what's going to happen to this station chief. I think what's going to happen is he's going to be transferred out rather quickly. Now, I brought this up because this is just another example of what I think is an incompetent and poorly executed foreign policy strategy. You see, I'm against undeclared wars. The Constitution is rather clear that it's only Congress that can declare war. The problem we've had over 50 instances of where the president has ordered military actions that are acts of war. In other words, they're undeclared, in many cases not even acknowledged, but the president orders the military to engage in operations that are objectively acts of war against nations. For example, our drone programs. One of the problems and one of the biggest complaints today heard from foreign nations, including Pakistan, Afghanistan, Yemen, and other countries in the Middle East, is the United States is using drones to kill religious extremists, fanatics, Al-Qaeda. Now, I don't have any problem with the president ordering the execution of someone that clearly is a terrorist. The problem is, and this is why there are many, many complaints, is many civilians, innocent civilians, are also being killed, so-called collateral damage. And that's the problem with drone programs. It first requires intelligence to really pinpoint where the terrorist is, and that requires human intelligence, informants in the nation, and getting the word up the chain of command so you can kill, and that's what we're doing, we're killing the enemies of the United States. The problem, you have two big problems. One is a lot of innocent civilians are being killed. Now, some will say they're just combatants or they're harboring them, and that's a problem, and you need to minimize that. But it causes ill will. They really hate us. They hate us. Yes, whoever's ruling that country might accommodate the United States doing that, but the people of the country, over time, it causes a tremendous amount of ill will and really hate against the American people, as well as our diplomats there and our CIA. I just got the signal I need to start to wrap up. So I wanted to address the foreign policy. I've sort of just got started, but I think it's a failure. Many of it in terms of the sheer implementation of it has been a failure. We have now, last count, was about 35,000 troops in the Middle East. At one time, it was less than 8,000. We're engaged. We're intervening abroad. Americans are dying, but also innocent civilians are dying. And he's making mistakes by threatening people publicly that he really should be doing in private, and then you need to follow through. So on different levels, Barack Obama's foreign policy is a disaster. Now, there's parts of it I agree with, and that's what I'll cover next show, because I think he has a strategy in the long run that I probably would go along with, but not the way he's executing it. Not at all. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. I hope you're getting ready for the summer semester. It starts, I believe, June 5th, next Thursday, and I'll be back in the studio next week. The studio is still shut down and will be shut down until the first week of June, so I'm doing it in a rather chilly bunker in Richland College. Actually, the sound is better, at least from what I'm hearing, because I do post-production. Have a good day. And thank you for listening. Until tomorrow. Bye-bye. Extremists, fanatics, Al-Qaeda. Now, I don't have any problem with the president ordering the execution of someone that clearly is a terrorist. The problem is, and this is why there are many, many complaints, is many civilians, innocent civilians, are also being killed. So-called collateral damage. And that's the problem with drone programs. It first requires intelligence to really pinpoint where the terrorist is, and that requires human intelligence, informants in the nation, and getting the word up the chain of command so you can kill, and that's what we're doing, we're killing the enemies of the United States. The problem, you have two big problems. One is a lot of innocent civilians are being killed. Now, some will say they're just combatants or they're harboring them, and that's a problem, and you need to minimize that. But it causes ill will. They really hate us. They hate us. Yes, whoever's ruling that country might accommodate the United States doing that, but the people of the country, over time, it causes a tremendous amount of ill will and really hate against the American people, as well as our diplomats there and our CIA. I just got the signal I need to start to wrap up. So I wanted to address the foreign policy. I've sort of just got started. But I think it's a failure. Many of it in terms of the sheer implementation of it has been a failure. We have now, last count, was about 35,000 troops in the Middle East. At one time, it was less than 8,000. We're engaged. We're intervening abroad. Americans are dying, but also innocent civilians are dying. And he's making mistakes by threatening people publicly that he really should be doing in private, and then you need to follow through. So on different levels, Barack Obama's foreign policy is a disaster. Now, there's parts of it I agree with, and that's what I'll cover next show, because I think he has a strategy in the long run that I probably would go along with, but not the way he's executing it. Not at all. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. I hope you're getting ready for the summer semester. It starts, I believe, June 5th, next Thursday, and I'll be back in the studio next week. The studio is still shut down and will be shut down until the first week of June, so I'm doing it in a rather chilly bunker in Richland College. Actually, the sound is better, at least from what I'm hearing, because I do post-production. Have a good day. And thank you for listening. Until tomorrow. Bye-bye.